And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the latest edition of the Audible presented by Trader Joe's. I'm Bruce Feldman, joined as always by my colleague from The Athletic, Stuart Mandel. We are taping this late Saturday night. Doesn't even feel like a Saturday, but it is New Year's Day. We had a bunch of football, some really compelling games. We're going to talk about those. We're going to talk about the blowouts of Friday night in the CFP, as well as some other compelling games that turned out to be stuff that we felt like really we all got kind of emotionally connected to. And Stu, before we get into the semifinal games, since they were a little more than 24 hours ago, we had the Rose Bowl not that long ago. We just had Baylor and Dave Aranda pull off a 12-win season by beating Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl. It was a pretty fun New Year's Day, just kind of like old times, right, where a lot of stuff happened.
I had a feeling that New Year's Day was going to end up being more entertaining than New Year's Eve, and that certainly ended up being the case. I know a lot of people like to crap on the Rose Bowl and wonder why we make such a big deal out of it in California and in the Midwest, and some people hate the fact that it maybe has kept us from playing the semis on New Year's Eve. I mean, on New Year's Day every year. But I got to say, the game often delivers. When you think about just in the last decade or so, the USC Penn State one, the Justin Herbert Oregon Wisconsin one a couple years ago went right down to the wire. But this was really something. I mean, we saw a receiver catch 16 passes for 347 yards. You know how people say, oh, those are PlayStation numbers. I don't even think you can do that on PlayStation.
You could if you're really good and decided, hey, I want my favorite player to go off. Jackson Smith and Jigba, who I don't even want to say quietly, because you had Garrett Wilson and you had Chris Olave and they weren't playing in this game. And then the number three receiver of the best receiving core in the country. I don't know if I want to say by far, but it sure seems like that, because they just have studs waiting in the wings. And the other thing, it's crazy to say this, but this is how I felt. Because you're right, his numbers were insane. But I just watching like CJ Stroud just drop one perfect pass into there, another. And it wasn't just to him, you know, it was Marvin Harrison Jr., it was Julian Fleming. It was just like he was so sharp today. And you just saw, like, man, you know, Ohio State has definitely been spoiled with great receivers dating back to, you know, Chris Carter and David Boston and Terry Glenn, and, you know, I'm sure I'm leaving out like 10 others before we even get to this wave that, you know, started in this decade. But man, you know, an amazing performance. But there was Utah. We know their story. We just had on, I think, the last episode or two episodes ago, Britton Covey. And Britton Covey made us look good because he was like, I mean,
he made the stadium shake.
Yes,
according to the people who were there with his kickoff return.
He made the stadium. So, what is going through your mind when you see Britton Covey break out into the open at like the 40?
Yeah,
is it like, all right?
I was really happy for him. I'm not going to lie. You know, we got a great chance to connect with him, and just what he means to that program. That, you know, the they love him there. He's revered there, and he got to have his moment. Because look, when the TV ratings come out, it's going to say that, I don't know, somewhere between 14, 15, 16 million, somewhere in that range, watched the Rose Bowl. And, you know, it's the moment of guys' lives. And you're right. I mean, Ohio State won the game. They came back to win the game. Give them credit. I agree with you. CJ Stroud it was a big moment for him because during the season, you know, he ended up being a Heisman finalist, and I wasn't sure if he should be or not, because it's how do you separate him from those three great receivers? Well, you take two of them out of the game, and he's still doing that. He ends up 37 of 46 for 573 yards, six touchdowns, and one interception, the interception coming in the end zone. You know, Utah, one disclaimer, had to play a running back at cornerback because they were down so bad there. And I'm sure that contributed to at least some of the numbers, but let's give them credit. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a big moment for both those teams. Utah comes away with the loss, but there were, by all accounts, it was 60-70% Utah fans there, and they made their fans proud. There was this crazy sequence late in the first half. Jackson Smith and Jigba catches a 50-yard touchdown. Then Britton Covey returns the touch, has the kickoff return to make it 28-14. Then Jackson comes back with a 52-yard touchdown catch. And then on Utah's next position, Cam Rising, if you remember, he's running down the sideline. It seems like the play's over. Oh, nobody tackled him. 62-yard touchdown. So four touchdowns of 50-plus yards happened in the span of 2 game minutes and felt like about 5 minutes in real time. And then the game got decided on a last-second field goal. So that game was unbelievable. Obviously, a lot more entertaining than the college football playoff semifinals, but those are the games that matter the most, and we should talk about them. And I hate to set it up this way, Bruce, but at what point in the Orange Bowl did you realize that maybe talking yourself into Michigan wasn't the best idea?
I think once there was a ball Stetson Bennett threw that would have been one C.J. Stroud would have been proud of. It was a deep ball down the right sideline. It was a perfect pass. Might have been the best ball he's thrown this year or maybe ever. And given that moment, you know, I think it probably would qualify as such. I thought a couple of things happened. There were a couple of plays that Michigan tried to run. I mean, we've been talking about N'Kobe Dean for a while, but it was like N'Kobe Dean knew what plays they were running. And he was blowing them up before they happened. And I think that man
did some film prep.
I also thought, you know, this was like a team, if you played UNLV in the UNLV heyday and they were shooting 70% from three. Because like if Stetson Bennett's throwing like that and some of those other things, they are really gonna be hard to beat because they have three running backs. And a couple of them are like basically like receivers also. And I think it was a matchup problem. You know, it's interesting. Before the year when Eric Gilbert was going to transfer there from LSU, and that was such a, you know, seemed like a game changer talent. And then obviously he didn't play this season. But Bryce Bowers, he comes from Northern California, from your area, and has been
Brock Bowers.
When I say Bryce Bowers? I think I'm thinking of...
He's from Napa.
No, I think I'm... Who's Bryce? Bryce Butler? I'm thinking I'm the old USC receiver is like Bobby Butler's son. Anyway, Brock Bowers comes in, and he turned out to be a real matchup nightmare. He hit a couple of big plays early, and I just thought, all right, will Michigan be able to settle down and kind of push back? And they couldn't. It was just like the gap widened. And honestly, it felt similar to what we had 3 hours earlier, where Cincinnati had one good drive to open the game and then they could do nothing. And I think the part that was like, you're watching that going, you know, Desmond Ridder, if he can't rise, you know, like have an A game here, they have no shot, right? And there were a couple opportunities, and you know, if you can, you know, like you said, if you talk yourself into thinking Michigan can beat them, if you talk yourself into thinking, like, he needed to play like a top 10 pick for them to have any chance to win that game. And obviously it didn't go that way.
Yeah. Look, Cincinnati was in it longer with Alabama than Michigan was with Georgia. And even then, I think once Alabama separated it to, it was 10-3 for a while. Once they got to 17-3 shortly before halftime, I didn't like the Bearcats' chances. The Michigan-Georgia game got out of hand almost immediately. And what I want to say is, I mean, first of all, any notion that the that Alabama and the SEC championship exposed Georgia, I don't feel that way anymore. That, you know, and this will be relevant obviously toward the national championship game, but that seemed a lot more like a bad night at the office now. After the way they're, in particular, the way they're deep. This was the defense that was so swarming and so dominant for 12 games that won't let you get in the end zone, which Michigan didn't do until almost the very end. This was that defense. N'Kobe Dean, Quay Walker, all those guys just flying around the field. You know, that's the Georgia we'd come to expect during the season. And so it doesn't like speak poorly of Michigan. I just think Georgia's that good. And Alabama, we were critical of at times during the season. I think that may have been a case of Georgia entered the season as more of a finished product. It's a more veteran team. Alabama lost a lot from the year before, but they seem to have gotten it together now. And in particular, I remember the LSU game in early November when they ran for 6 yards. And we were like, I don't know what's wrong with them. Alabama, you expect them to be able to run the ball and they can't run the ball. Well, Brian Robinson went for 200 against Cincinnati. So I know America is frustrated. They don't want to watch a rematch of the Georgia-Alabama game, especially since the first one wasn't particularly close. But what's interesting is, despite the fact Alabama pretty much blew them off the field last time, Georgia is a 2.5-point favorite for the second go-around.
I think, and I could be a little off on this, but I think, you know, America collectively, I think they're more frustrated by the semifinal matchup stinking than they are. Like, I'm looking forward to the national title game. I'd be looking forward to it no matter what. But, I mean, you have two heavyweight teams. I mean, looking back, I think Michigan, with how they are in terms of they're so run heavy, and, you know, the reality is their quarterback is nowhere near Bryce Young's level. And I think that's a problem for them. There was no go-to receiver. And I just think that that's a bad matchup for them. I really think it is. I'm not saying that Alabama's going to light up Georgia again. But I think this is a really interesting, you know, I think this is an interesting national title game. Again, you have the whole thing about Kirby Smart's never beaten his mentor. This wasn't a particularly close game the last time they played. And so I think this is pretty compelling. I know a lot of people aren't going to love, you know, there's less buildup now also because there's less time. It's not like it's a month of this. There's basically 10 days. And quite honestly, you know, I don't think people after this weekend, I think they'll put down college football for a week and they'll pick it back up, you know, right, on Monday morning, a week from this Monday, because they'll get into NFL and they'll get into whatever else they're into. So I don't know. I'm very intrigued by the matchup. I will definitely say that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very intrigued because I like watching good college football, and these are two really good college football teams. They're the two best teams in the country. I don't think there's any disputing it. But I think you're underestimating the public at large, how much they hate rematches, but specifically how much they hate SEC rematches. And when you think about, this is now the third time since 2011 that we've had an all-SEC national championship game. The first time, LSU-Alabama, at least the first time they played, it was an overtime game.
But you and I were both at that game. That game had no touchdowns. Yeah, that was an ugly game. And then
believe me, I remember how people hated that rematch so much that they practically changed the BCS the next morning.
Yeah, what I remembered about
now, when Alabama and Georgia played in 2017, it was a classic. It was the Tua second and 26, but they hadn't actually played each other during the season.
So it wasn't a rematch. Like, the only thing I remember was, you know, LSU's offense was dreadful that night. I feel like I remember T-Bob went off in the post-game press conference.
That was the beginning of I would say it was the beginning of the end for Les, but he still lasted another 5 years. But that was the night everybody there turned on him.
Yeah. Look, so we can probably talk more about the actual matchup in the next episode.
Sure. Yes. You know, I think there were a lot of comments. So I wrote my final thoughts after the semifinal games. There were like 350 comments by the time I looked on it. You know, a common theme in there was people expressing some variation of frustration that there isn't more parity, and frustration at me or you or us in the media for not trying to do something about it, to just be content with the way things
are. What are we supposed to do about it?
Yeah, that's what I said. I don't know. There's not going to be I think people, some people want college to do, to have some sort of, like the NFL draft, has a salary cap, a draft, and, a draft, yeah, yeah, and they want there to be something.
Well, then you should like NIL, and you should tell all your school's boosters, if you're not at one of these SEC programs, do what, look, I had this story that I had the one coach talk about what he was hoping his boosters would do. Stop complaining. Now you can pony up, and now you can get in the game.
You can just contribute it to yourself. I mean, I don't think it's that simple. I mean,
no, it's not that simple.
So,
but
so we've now had 16 semifinals in the college football playoff, and only three of them have been decided by fewer than 17 points. It's nuts. You would think, in theory.
So one of the things I thought, I do want to interject for a second. One of the things when you said 350 comments that I thought you were going to say, which I don't think there's a good answer to this, is those two teams didn't deserve to be there. Because the truth is, you couldn't have had, you know, if
you mean Michigan and Cincinnati?
Yeah, if you didn't have them. It's like,
I actually didn't see a lot of that because Notre Dame was number five.
Notre Dame was number five.
It was like, and this buffer.
Yeah, and then you couldn't have had Ohio, and you can't have Ohio State because they lost to Michigan.
Yeah, there were some people on Twitter who were saying, oh, you know, if Ohio State were playing in this game, they wouldn't be down.
They didn't have a chance. If Ohio State, Ohio State would have been a better matchup, because you can see how dangerous their passing game is. I don't think their defense would have held up. Their defense probably would have held up worse than Michigan's did.
At the end of the day, Ohio State lost to two of the three best teams they played. You know, there was never a chance they were going to be picked for a 4-team playoff. Now, you could say if it were a 12-team playoff, maybe both Ohio State and Utah find their way into the Final Four, or Baylor, you know, somebody who didn't have a shot in this system. But look, at the end of the day, you can expand the playoff, you can tinker with the format all you want. Like, that doesn't solve the parity thing at all. That's just the state of the sport right now. And you know, people don't like me saying this, but there is a consolidation of power in the Southeast, in the SEC in particular, but also Clemson. Florida State has won a national title there. We already know a team from the Southeast is going to win the title again this year. That'll be 15 times in 16 years that either an SEC team, Clemson, or Florida State won the national
title. So the only aberration was the Urban Meyer, Ezekiel Elliott run of Ohio State. Now look, in truth,
And Urban Meyer, by the way, began this run for the SEC when Florida beat Ohio State. That's when this 16-year period began.
But if you think about it, those teams, and I would include where Ryan Day still has the team, they have enough firepower to play with these, you know, with these teams. I mean, now look, they stubbed their toe against Iowa. They stubbed their toe against Purdue. You know, those are games where they get whipped. But like, they have enough talent, you know, like they've recruited better. You know, this is our colleague Ari Wasserman's like kind of a little bit of like a alarm clock with it. But like, they actually recruited better on the star system than that Clemson national title team did. Like, that wasn't a top five. That was like a fringe top 10, you know, outfit. But, you know, Ohio State, they have recruited on that level. It'll be interesting to see if Jimbo Fisher can take Texas A&M, because right now they are like lingering at 8-4. It's not like they're playing at a level of, but now this seems like a breakthrough class, although he had some other great classes before. Can they do that? I mean, you know, look, honestly, USC, they didn't look like it, but if you look at some of their classes, they had recruited extremely well, but they just didn't live up to it. Just like towards the end, Jimbo's classes didn't come up close to anywhere.
It's not just recruiting, although it's certainly the number one factor. Georgia and Alabama, I believe, are the number, going into the season, were the number one and two teams in the 24/7 talent composite, which, you know, is a compilation of all their recruits on their roster. And now they're playing in the national championship game. So clearly you can draw a pretty direct line there. But like you said, I mean, there's a lot of programs out there, USC, Texas in particular, right, who sign these top five, top 10 classes every year and are nowhere near the picture. So it's, you got to get the talent. Yes, that's step one. But, you know, the reason Alabama is able to do this year after year after year is what they do with them once they get on campus, right? They have the infrastructure, they have the money, they have, I mean, they have Bill O'Brien calling plays, and they have Doug Marrone coaching the offensive line. I mean, it's just, when you say there's no way to create parity, and what are you going to do, tell Alabama, no, you can't hire those guys. Let somebody else get them. No, you can't, enough. You've signed enough five stars for this class. Let somebody else get some. There's just a few programs that are what I would consider to be a machine. Alabama is clearly the
yeah, it's the not model. Even it's not even close. It's not even close at this point. It's Alabama, and then
the number one reason so many of those semifinals have been blowouts is because Alabama's played in so many of them. You know, they're the one doling out the blowouts for you know, more than anybody else. But Georgia is almost there. They haven't won the whole thing yet, but I mean, this is their second national title game under Kirby Smart. They have played in a New Year's Six Bowl, I think, every year since the last trip. So Ohio State qualifies as one of those programs. Clemson qualifies as one of those programs. But there is a drop-off from those to Michigan, Notre Dame, a number of other programs who are good and can have a good year and get Oklahoma, have a good year and get into the playoff. And then they get in the playoff and you see that there's still a gap. So, I mean, frankly, I would say the gap from Georgia and Alabama to like the next two or so or more is a lot wider than the gap from, you know, number three to number eight or something, you know, somewhere in that range.
I think there's still a big gap between, I know what the recruiting system's rank number is, makes it closer, Alabama and Georgia. And I'm not saying Alabama is going to blow out Georgia again, but I think there is a big gap to me between, in terms of what Alabama has done and has compared to where Georgia is. Now, Georgia can win a national title that way, but I still...
Well, that's because Alabama's been standing in Georgia's way. And this will be the, you know, and another reason why I think people might not be loving this national championship matchup. This is the third time they've played in about 13, 14 months, right? Because they played during the regular season, the regular season that was shifted later last season. So I don't remember when that game was exactly. Maybe October or November. So
if I ask you quickly, which do you think people have less of an appetite for, Georgia, Alabama, or Alabama, Clemson?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer. I do remember that when Alabama and Clemson played for the national title out here in Santa Clara, I think that at that point they had met four times in a row. And yet I was like really excited for that game because it was Tua against Trevor Lawrence and they were both 14-0. I just remember like this is a dream matchup. And yet, and now Clemson ended up blowing them out. But on paper, it was a great matchup. And people are like, I'm sick. I don't care. I don't want to see them again. I'm done. I'm done with it.
Can I make a
What do you think?
I think, I don't feel this way necessarily, but I think people would rather have or more have the appetite for Georgia, Alabama than Clemson, Alabama. I feel like there's a lot of people who are kind of over Dabo. And
yeah, that's true.
Like, I saw something that I didn't see it happen live today, but like I saw our colleague Seth Emerson posted it on his Twitter feed, and it was a almost like a cell phone video that Kirby Smart had to do when he was being interviewed on game day. It was right out, you know, it was like the morning after his game. I think he shot it from a very unflattering angle from like underneath his neck. You know, it was a very unflattering image of him. But you know what? I got to say, like, I found it kind of endearing to him because it's like, hey, you know what? I'm a football coach. I don't care if this is like the most glamour shot of me. This is it. I'm gonna talk to you and I'm gonna do this. And it was just like, hey, whatever, you know. And I'm not saying that, like, because I don't feel like people have much of an impression about Kirby Smart unless you're a Georgia or a diehard SEC fan one way or the other about him. But I don't know where I'm going with that. I just feel like people do not have, I feel like they're just kind of for the most part indifferent with him.
That's the thing. You're saying people, like, I bet more people would watch if it was Clemson, Alabama, because they hate Dabo and they want to root against Dabo. I don't think people, much of the country has feelings one way or the other about Georgia. You know, Kirby hasn't really developed much of a persona yet. And the interesting thing about this Georgia team is they're really good, but they don't have, you know, like when ESPN puts up the little lower third with like one guy from each team, they're clearly going to put up Bryce Young from Alabama. Who are they going to put up from Georgia? They don't have like a, this is the superstar of the team. They have a lot of great players.
Yeah. By the way, you know, the guy who a lot of people would assume is the headliner of the defense, which is Jordan Davis, the biggest guy. He's actually one of the few guys who is not a big recruit. He was a three-star guy. You know, it's like...
they actually have quite a few. I mean, Brock Bowers was not a big-time recruit at all.
Well, he was a pretty big recruit, though.
I think he was a three-star.
No, he was a four-star. He's like the number three-rated tight end in the country. I mean, he may have blown up, yeah. You know who wasn't a big recruit, obviously? Stetson Bennett was a two-star coming out of high school.
You got a former walk-on quarterback, you know, that could lead them to the national championship. I don't know, the moment I thought, okay, yeah, I think Georgia could pull this off, was when Kirby refused to take the Gatorade bath. He was like, uh-uh, we're not celebrating winning a semifinal. Wait and see if we win the championship. I would be fascinated to see. He does show so little emotion usually. I'd be fascinated to see what it is like if he wins, because as we know, Georgia has not won the national championship since 1980. So, I mean, just from an interest standpoint, it would be a lot more interesting for college football if Georgia won and you had some new blood holding up the trophy, whereas, oh, Alabama beat them again. Nick Saban won the national championship again. But hey, I don't know. It's certainly it's hard to have that much faith in Georgia after how the first game went. But like I said, Vegas does not seem deterred. They see a Georgia team that has been dominant in every game but one this season, whereas Alabama has, you know, stubbed their toe at times. And it's kind of like, okay, which version of which team are we going to see?
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
There's another story we need to talk about that kind of went viral on New Year's Day. A certain TV, college football TV analyst, was hosting a segment before the Rose Bowl. They were talking about players opting out of bowls. And he said, to the shock of many of us, that, well, these players say they just don't love football.
Are we talking about my colleague Brady Quinn, first of all? Let's clear this up.
No. I mean, it was Kirk Herbstreit. I don't want to necessarily... I'm trying to avoid throwing him under the bus too much, but... he did make that comment, and look, he's not your typical football, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about college football for a living, but he's definitely the most high profile, the most visible. I mean, the guy called the Orange Bowl, I'm getting my days of the week mixed up, Friday night, and got on a plane, flew overnight to be on this set of this show, and then called the Rose Bowl. He's everywhere. He tried to backtrack a little bit on Twitter later, but still kind of inferred that a lot of guys playing today don't love football, you know, as opposed to, it was Desmond Howard who was on it with him, and they were kind of, you know, they both played in the Rose Bowl in the early 90s when it was still the pinnacle, and I think they consider it kind of sacrilegious that those Ohio State players would choose not to play in it. But yeah, I took exception to it, and then it really kind of blew up in his face during the Sugar Bowl when Matt Corral got injured. And look, great for Matt Corral that he decided to play in the game. You're never going to hear me criticize a guy for playing in a bowl game instead of opting out. And knock on wood, it turns out not to be that major an injury. Lane Kiffin said the x-rays were negative. But man, it was really hard to see this guy, you know, decide to play this game, didn't have to, could have you know, tried to preserve the injury risk for a possible first round draft pick on crutches during the game. So, you know, I think I'm a little surprised that this is still a debate. I know it's from an entertainment standpoint, obviously it stinks not to, you know, you turn on the Peach Bowl the other night and there's no, and Kenny Pickett's like up on the press box on a headset. I don't think Kenneth Walker was there. Sure, you'd obviously rather from an entertainment standpoint be watching those guys play, but I don't think they're opting out because they don't love football. They're opting out because there are millions of dollars on the line, and either they don't want to take that risk or they, and I know this happens, the agents, you know, they have agents lined up unofficially long before they turn pro, and the agents are telling them don't do that, you know, don't risk it. We'll get you started on training for the combine sooner. You know, so it's a business. End of the day, it's a business. And I think some people just have a hard time accepting that. They want to hold on to this, whatever previous era where you played for the love, strictly for the love of the game and your school and your teammates, and there was no business element to it. But all you got to do is watch these broadcasts and all these, you know, there's so much money tied up in these games. It is a business.
I thought there's a couple of things going on here. So first of all, let's walk backwards on it. So the Matt Corral part, you know, seeing it and seeing him carted off into the locker room before he's getting x-rayed, you know, I don't disagree with anybody. Like you said, I mean, it's like, it's great that he wanted to play and the passion mm-hmm. he had for it. And that's great. I think where a lot of people and myself included, and I like Kirk, I'm friendly with him. I think he does an excellent job. I mean, he's basically the conscience of college football. And I think sometimes, you know, segments can get long and people can go into directions where I'm not sure, you know, I'm not saying it was...
It's live TV. Sometimes something just slips out, not the way you intended.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's the case or not the case, and you know, here, but what I do think is, you know, like in the context of, okay, he doesn't love football, I'm not sure you can say whether it's who it was directly related to, whether it's players opting out at Ohio State, whether it's players opting out of some other bowl. My point on this is, like, it's not like this is anything new. There were plenty of players who didn't like college football who were probably really, really good at it and also really, really good in the NFL, who may not have loved it as much as some other guys did. I think there's that element of it. I remember this is, and I mentioned this to Max Olson earlier in the day. I remember being at a bowl game, which was like, this was about 20 years ago, and it was a loaded top 10 team with a bunch of NFL guys, and they got blown out by another team. And I just remember hearing from one of the coaches, it was like, yeah, this, like, there were guys who basically kind of were checked out. They may not have opted out because people weren't doing it at that point, but they basically were making business decisions and really were not into the game, and it showed up. And I don't know if there's that much of a difference, because, like, back then you'd hear, well, if you're really not that into it, you know, you're going to be at a physical injury risk at that point if you're half-assing it out there, or you half-assed it in your preparation and that kind of thing. So I think there's that part of it. But also, I think in the context of this, which probably rubs some people the wrong way, and this definitely was something I thought about, was that if it's not a playoff game, people don't value these bowl games. They don't just, like, mean what they used to. Well, part of the issue, I think, is, you know, and again, full disclosure, people know this, I work at Fox, which is a competitor to ESPN, but ESPN has the biggest microphone when it comes to college football, and they run the playoff. And when you talk about, well, I forget what the slogan is, you know,
who's in,
if you're not in, it's essentially like the, and I'm not saying they basically say this, but it's like, who, if you're not in, you don't matter. But everything is so slanted yeah. towards the playoff, where we talked about having the playoff expanded, because a lot of those games in November that they just don't matter so much. And I think that all factors into this. How, you know, everything is connected on social media, and how does that discourse not kind of become part of it, right? So I don't begrudge anybody who's like, you know, like people can say, oh, you can get hurt in a practice. You can get, of course you can. But I think when you're talking about like the difference between, we'd be surprised if a player opted out of a playoff game. But at the same point, you know, Brian Kelly basically opted out of a chance to, you know, be on, coach a playoff team at that point, right? I mean, so this isn't just the players. Plenty of people have pointed out examples, and I think our colleague Ari Wasserman, who did a column kind of off this, pointed out there have been coaches who just kind of like, hey, I'm not coaching the bowl game. I'm out of here. I'm going someplace else already.
I think Kirk's in a difficult position because, and you alluded to it, I don't consider the bowl games meaningless. I don't think most of the players on the teams consider them meaningless, but there is this perception out there that they've, because of the playoff, they become meaningless. If that is the case,
they become, not, they might not be meaningless. They have definitely been devalued.
Devalued. I'm not saying the Athletic doesn't play some part in that. We obviously covered the college football playoff, but nobody does more to emphasize the notion that those three games mean way more than the others than ESPN. And understandably so, they pay, I had to look this up to refresh my memory, $470 million a year to show those three games. There's a reason those games are on ESPN and not ABC. It's so that you'll have to keep signing up for cable, or so your cable provider or YouTube TV or whoever will keep carrying ESPN because they have these three massive games on it. And it's not, and it doesn't start in, it's year round or it's season round. And, you know, I can remember watching like a, I can't remember if it was a group of five game. I was watching a game late in the season that had, where the two teams were not remotely in the playoff picture, and the announcers just kept talking about the playoff race. Well, what do you think's going to, do you think Notre Dame could do that? Do you think Cincinnati? And I remember thinking like, this has got to be so infuriating to the fans of the teams that are in this game. They're not talking about their teams. They're talking about the playoff race. And then, and Sam Kahn, our colleague, pointed this out on Twitter earlier today. If you've watched some of the early bowl games, if you watched some of those group of five bowl games, if you watched, I don't know, the Cheez-It Bowl, at halftime of every one of these bowl games, they would do a segment having something to do with the playoff games. So all that's a long way of saying, you know, I don't think the players themselves watch ESPN and they're getting the message that the bowl game they're going to doesn't matter as much as Alabama, Cincinnati, and Michigan, Georgia.
That's a lot of stuff we've kind of like tied into a box and stuck in the cake there.
Well, you know, it's, I joke about it, but every time, this time of year, every year, it's like everybody wants to solve college football's postseason. The season itself is so great, and then it gets to the postseason, everybody feels let down. They want to fix it. We got to expand it. We got to create more parity. We got to do something. Expanding the playoff at this point, to me, what it means for me, it's not about determining the national champion. There has not been a year where the best team in the country wasn't among those four, and that's certainly true this year. It is about, you know, that the Fiesta Bowl, the Notre Dame Oklahoma State Fiesta Bowl. It was a great game. It went right down to the wire, and it just felt like an undercard, right? Like it was kind of wedged between the playoff games and the Rose Bowl. Now, in this new system that they're proposing, that maybe that's a playoff quarterfinal game with you know, nobody's opting out of that, you would hope, and feeds into, you know, those two teams are still playing for the national championship. That's what it's about. It's about adding some excitement to the postseason in the early rounds and the other bowl games, even if it ends in the same exact result.
You know what made me happy about the bowl season? There are randoms where it was like the Cheez-It Bowl from a couple of years ago, or in this case, the Music City Bowl. Like if you had told me a month ago or whenever it is that Selection Sunday happens, that Tennessee-Purdue would be must-see TV for about 2 hours, I'd be like, I'll watch it. I'm not seeing that. Especially without like Tennessee without,
I thought Tennessee was going to blow them out.
Especially without, I'm sorry, without Purdue, yeah. Without David Bell or George Karloftis. And in fact, like our Joe Rexford, our colleague, I think it was him or maybe it was Ubbin. Somebody was like, yeah, this is not going to last. It's like Tennessee is just, you know, Hendon Hooker is just going to light them up, you know, and it looked like it was going to happen. And then like credit to Jeff Brohm, because when he goes into his bag of tricks and gets rolling, it's like, you know, he's got Ryan Thompson's son, Brock, who looks like he's falling apart on every play that he catches it, and they can't get him off the field. You know, it was just like, it was, to me, that kind of sums up the bowl season.
That was the non-New Year's Six bowl of the year so far.
Yeah, it was just like great drama. I know if I was a Tennessee fan, I'd be miserable because of like, was his forward progress really stopped? But the whistle didn't get blown. You know, it was like, but just as a fan with no, you know, with no dog in the fight, I was like, man, this was a lot of fun, you know? And that's the thing that I think, you know, look, Danny Connell, my former colleague, had, I think he tweeted something, you know, along this, and we see this from random people a lot, where it's be like, yeah, there are too many bowls, or why are there so many bowls? And then you'll get one of these games, and there could be a 6-6 against a 6-6. I mean, that wasn't, you know, Purdue and Tennessee were not 6-6 teams. Purdue was 8-4, but where you get some of these matchups, and it turns out to be, you know, just a really fun game. And I think that's one of the things that I love most about the bowl season is just like, you know, it's like you get really invested in it when you didn't see it coming. And, you know, invariably, like I'll take that for the other, you know, whatever, how many bowls there are, 82 now or whatever. I'll take, you know, I'll take the chances on that because, I mean, you know, like I always said, we're going to lose the sport in a couple weeks. And those matchups, whether they're players or teams are shorthanded or not, it just gets to be a lot of fun to watch those teams kind of like in the players. Maybe it's the last game and a lot of these guys will ever play.
Clemson, I enjoyed Clemson, Iowa State, Cheez-It Bowl a lot. And, you know, here's Clemson. If anybody would have a reason to be disinterested in the Cheez-It Bowl, it would be Clemson. It was just played in six straight playoffs, right? And it was just a crushing way to end it for Brock Purdy, the Iowa State quarterback. He had, you know, he's trying to keep them alive. They're down 7. He gains the first down, and then he fumbles backward so that they didn't get the first down. Dabo and Clemson celebrated that exactly the way they would have celebrated winning the national championship. They, you know, it was fun to see. And, yeah, so I just wish the too many bowls crowd and the got to expand the playoff crowd, although I'm among that crowd, and the we need more parity would all just kind of sit back and just, like you said, like, there's not going to be any college football for 8 months. Just sit. It's meant to be fun. Bowl season is fun. We just sit back and have fun watching the games and maybe not be so up in arms about all of it.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, Stu, we don't always do these. We try to, but
we haven't done it in a long time.
We haven't done it in a long time. This is not the mailbag. This is actually our shout-outs. Why don't you go first?
Yes. So, you know, we mentioned a bunch of these New Year's Six Bowls in passing, but Oklahoma State down 28-7 at one point, comes back to beat Notre Dame. Shout out to Mike Gundy, who they'd had a couple mediocre seasons and people had kind of forgotten about them. Well, Oklahoma State rises up this year, reaches the Big 12 championship game, loses in heartbreaking fashion, but then comes out and beats Notre Dame in the Fiesta Bowl. And Mike Gundy afterwards has the biggest win in school history. And he would know because he's been a player or coach there for several decades. That's a big win for them. Tough loss for Marcus Freeman in his first game as the Notre Dame head coach. And that's going to be the more dominant storyline because it's Notre Dame. But yeah, that's a really big deal for Oklahoma State. They got to 12 wins. They hadn't done that since 2011. So congratulations to them.
My shout out is also Big 12 related. It is for the Big 12 champion, Baylor Bears, Dave Aranda. Last year, first season there, really struggles. Only wins two games, reshuffles his offensive staff, brings in Jeff Grimes from BYU, and it works well. And they're really good on defense. Ron Roberts, his mentor, runs the show. And I think Dave has done a remarkable job. 12 wins, the best season in Baylor history. And this came up a bunch in the broadcast tonight with our friend Joe Tess, where they were talking about, obviously people know about when Art Briles was there and they had a lot of success on the field. And then Matt Rhule came in and really cleaned the place up after the program and the university. You know, they cleaned house. Matt Rhule came in, did a remarkable job, left for the NFL, but a lot of his players were still there. And, you know, it was interesting to hear Dave get interviewed after the game, because as you and I both know, he is extremely thoughtful and you know,
he doesn't do sound bites.
You could see there was some emotion going there. He was thinking about it. He kept on talking about how selfless this team was. It was also kind of tough, I think, because of the way the broadcast worked. You usually don't interview somebody twice within a span of like 5 minutes, but that's how it worked out, where they interviewed him after the game and then they interviewed him like 5 minutes later on the stage as he's up in the trophy. But man, if you're a Baylor fan right now, you ought to feel pretty good. You just won a basketball national title. And your football program just had the greatest season in school history. It's pretty remarkable. They got a good thing there with Dave Aranda right now. A lot of people were interested in him this year, and I think they're doing a new deal for him. And I mean, it couldn't get much better.
I think it's a pretty good time to be a Big 12 football fan, period, because they
you got Cincinnati way, coming in.
You talk about great Houston bowl moments. How about Bob Stoops getting to hug his son Drake Stoops on the sideline after he caught a touchdown in the Alamo Bowl? But so Baylor, Oklahoma State, and Oklahoma all beat top 15 teams, I believe. All teams that all won 10 or 11 games.
Never mind that, Stoops. Never mind Bob hugging Drake. How about Dana Holgorsen, who's coming into the conference, bringing in the naked statue and letting him in the bulkhead? I mean, that's pretty sweet.
Dana had a nice bowl win for sure. You know, as did future Big 12 member UCF. And Cincinnati didn't win its bowl game, but it had just now two straight remarkable seasons. And by the time they get to the Big 12, just has completely changed their, the perception of that program. So it's still going to hurt to lose Oklahoma and Texas, but, you're feeling better than you were this summer, to say the least. Can I do one more bowl shout out?
Just a second. I'm trying to find all the way back to see if BYU won its bowl, but it felt like it was two months ago.
It did not. It got knocked off by UAB in the Independence Bowl, which feels about like 3 months ago.
It does. Oh, my God.
Yeah. My shout-out's to Wandell Robinson, the Kentucky receiver who went against that great Iowa pass defense. 10 catches, 170 yards, including the 52-yard catch that set up the winning touchdown in their comeback win over the Hawkeyes. That's 10 wins for the second time in 4 seasons for Mark Stoops.
Yeah, it's a hell of a run he's got there. If you're Kentucky and you got to keep him, your defensive coordinator, Brad White, who a lot of people tried to hire away, your offensive coordinator, Liam Cohen, who I think a lot of people would try to hire away, that's pretty good if you keep all three of those in place. And you get your quarterback coming back, Will Levis.
Now you just need to get Georgia, like, you need the conference to realign. You need
to get Georgia to, realign to the NFC South.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're talking about doing pods when it gets to 16 teams. Maybe they'll be in a different pod. But still, I mean, they're loving life there right now, Kentucky football. They've got a better program than Florida. They got a better program than Tennessee. That was not the case for several decades before that. Yeah, so like you said, we'll have another episode before the national title game, certainly, to talk more Georgia-Alabama and finally catch up on your emails. Send them to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.